Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It can be a really exciting time when a kid goes off to college, but for many young people, it's the first time that they're away from home and almost completely unsupervised. And the statistics about college experience is very disturbing. For girls especially, it can be a dangerous situation. According to a report from the Department of Justice, roughly one in five women who attend college will become the victim of a rape or an attempted rape by the time they graduate. And it's surprisingly easy to get away with rape. Arrests are made in only 25% of cases. And on college campuses, the issue is further complicated by college justice systems, which are individual to each school, and they sometimes punish the victims. Kristen Lombardi is with us. She's from the Center for Public Integrity, and she's just finished a three-part investigative journalism piece on this topic. The first part is published on the organization's website today. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning.
First of all, let's talk about these statistics, which are incredible. As I said, one in five women is going to be the victim of a rape or an attempted rape when they go to college. 95% of those women will not report it to the college or the university or to an authority. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So how widespread is this? Are there areas which are more dangerous? Is it maybe urban colleges? Is there any way places that are safe?
Well, I think those statistics are, you know, across the board nationally. It's very hard to generalize because, as you said in your introduction, each university has its own college judicial system. I really looked at, you know, the college judicial system and how it adjudicates claims of campus sexual assault because there is such a tiny minority of students who do come forward and who do go through the hearing process.
5%. You actually spoke with one of them. Catherine Russell is talking. She talked to you about the experience she had in which she was raped and she went to campus authorities to try and get justice.
After I reported the man who attacked me to the university, I was given a brochure and told to go home and think about it, and I had several deans discourage me from following through with the reporting of the crime. I had them tell me that it was a lost cause, that if I talked about how the school trial was going, that I would be expelled or could be expelled because it was a university judicial proceeding.
Let me kind of repeat what she just said. The school told her if she talked about what had happened to her, she would be expelled.
Yes, that is what she says, and that is actually what the education department corroborated, because Catherine is very unusual. She actually, first of all, she went through the process, and at UVA, only 33 students in the last 10 years have gone through the campus judicial process with allegations of rape.
But the stats, it should be hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah.
Well, UVA is a campus of 21,000. Right now.
It's one out of five of 21,000.
Yeah, so we're talking a tiny, tiny minority who make it to the hearing process. I mean, part of our series was to look at those who get diverted. They actually may come forward, and Catherine sort of alluded this in her answer when she said she was discouraged initially by deans, and we heard that a lot as we went through the investigation.
Well, the University of Virginia responded. They sent us an email that says, one sexual assault on a college campus is one too many. Higher education has had to map its way through how best to deal with these extraordinarily difficult and terrible events. We've listened attentively to our students, both women and men, who've given us valuable perspective. At the University of Virginia, we have to put into place what we believe are best practices by today's standards. But like all universities, we're continually reassessing what we do and making changes where they are needed as soon as they are needed. So it sounds like they are working on a policy. The one thing that struck me, though, in the report when I read it was that you actually had someone from Illinois said that under current law, colleges can release the name of students who are found responsible for committing violent acts, but colleges do not release those. And in fact, in Catherine's case, the young man that she accused went on to be accused of another sexual assault.
Yes. Actually, that was very interesting. I mean, we did file records requests with individual schools based on the cases that we featured, asking for the names of accused students found responsible. And this is something that schools are allowed to release publicly, but nobody released that information.
Why not?
You know, administrators that we talked to basically really I think part of the problem with the campus judicial system is that it's a confidential and closed process. It's not like your civil or your criminal court process.
Well, it's also a marketing thing. I mean, you're kind of like theme parks where they don't report on injuries at the theme park, or a hospital that doesn't report on mortalities. It's not in their interest. They're incentivized to not report about sexual assaults on campus because students won't go there. Parents won't send their kids there, right?
Well, certainly that's what critics believe. I mean, administrators will argue and justify the confidential process. We are not adjudicating criminal laws. We're not adjudicating crimes. We are adjudicating and deciding whether or not a student's conduct violates our own code. It's an institutional matter. It's not a matter for public consumption, and that's how they see even allegations involving violent acts, which rape obviously
is. I got three girls. I mean, that sounds to me like on campus, a sexual assault is a sort of boys will be boys kind of thing. And out in the community, it's a rape. It's a felony.
Well, certainly there's that dichotomy. And that's one of the things that, you know, struck me when I first started investigating these cases. Why is it that colleges and universities are adjudicating claims of campus sexual assault in the first place? It is a felony crime. Then when it comes down to it, students that are found responsible, I mean, we personally found that punishment is lenient. It's, you know, light academic penalties, suspension if you're lucky. Expulsion is very, very rare. And in the real world, you're talking about, you know, jail time if somebody is found in violation.
And this doesn't, they don't release it. It doesn't end up on their record anyway.
No, it doesn't end up on their record.
So they could go on to commit another violent act. We've only seen the very first part of Kristen Lombardi's investigative reporting for the Center for Public Integrity. The rest will be released early next year, and I'm sure we will be checking back in with you, Kristen. Thank you so much. To get more of that, you can go to our website, or you can go to the website for the Center for Public Integrity.
Thank you.
If you missed anything, we're always on here at The Takeaway. You can take our podcast to go. Subscribe now at thetakeaway.org or on iTunes, where you can go and listen to that interview again with Kristen. And today we are looking forward to tonight, when President Obama stands before the cadets at West Point and outlines his strategy to the world on Afghanistan. We want to take the pulse for what you'll be listening for and what issues you're particularly sensitive to. Are you looking for an exit strategy? Are you looking for President Obama's plans to project diplomacy, soft power? And how much will you focus on the number of troops involved?
This is Dana from South Wellfleet. I'm hoping, I know he won't say it, but what I want him to say is that we are withdrawing all American troops from Iraq and Afghanistan, that we're no longer going to occupy countries.
It's interesting, John, because the other response we had from a listener was
initiate the draft.
Exactly.
I think it's fair to say those are two things we will not hear tonight, no longer occupying countries and initiating the draft.
I think that's very clear to say, but clearly there's a couple people who want to. But we want to hear your story, especially those stories from veterans and military families, but from anyone. What are you hoping to hear from your president and commander-in-chief? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. I am Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.